Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. We've got a publisher spotlight tonight with Valiant Comics, with the relaunch of Valiant coming up. I thought it would be a great time to go back and look at some of the original Valiant stuff, which was great, great comics. And who better to talk about this with me than Sean Neprud, who is the one of the hosts of the Only the Valiant podcast and probably the guy who knows more about Valiant, in my opinion, than anyone else on Earth. So let's talk about Valiant. Thanks for joining me, Sean.
Thanks a lot, Bob. I don't know if I know more about Valiant than anyone on Earth, but I definitely know a lot, a whole lot.
We'll get you up in the Valiant Trivia Contest.
Yeah, I've done fairly well in Valiant Trivia Contests in the past. I will say that.
Okay, we're going to start off with basic history of Valiant, and I'm going to defer to you on a lot of the Valiant facts and trivia, and I'll throw in color commentary where I feel that it would fit.
Cool, sounds good. Valiant has an interesting origin, I think, because it really stems from the 80s Marvel, because so Jim Shooter left Marvel in, I believe, 1989 or so, and he put together a group to actually put in a bid to buy Marvel Comics because it was up for sale, and he lost that bid. The group he put together lost the bid, and Ron Perlman was the winner of that, and he took Marvel in the direction that it went in the 90s. But Jim Shooter decided to form another company, and it was with Steve Misarsky, who was a entertainment lawyer, I think, like for the Allman Brothers band or something. And it was funded by a group called Triumph Venture Capital, and they brought in Bob Layton and Barry Windsor Smith to form a new company, and it was Valiant Comics. For the first year or two, they were doing like licensed work, like Nintendo Comics and Wrestling Comics, and then in 1991 they started what Valiant is really known for, which was their superhero universe, and that was the original incarnation of Valiant. I don't want to get too into depth into all the details, but after about 2 years or so, Jim Shooter was forced out of the company due to business differences, creative differences, and whatnot. And for about 2 years after that, Valiant was wildly successful. And this is the, I call it the chromium era of Valiant, when they were putting out tons of books. And at one point, they were the number three publisher after DC Comics, at least for a couple months. They had sales above everybody else, and only after DC after that. And then in 1994, they were sold to Acclaim Comics, and the comics quickly went downhill because Acclaim put on a mandate that all of the comics should be like our video games, and it quickly kind of spiraled down until sales kind of just dwindled into nothing. And then in 96, Acclaim relaunched all of the Valiant Comics with all new characters, just with the same names, but entirely different concepts and whatnot. So that's kind of the quick bird's eye view of what happened with Valiant. They kind of started with a bang and then kind of slid downhill after this meteoric rise in popularity in the early 90s.
What do you let's talk a little bit about some of the missteps there. I mean, and it's just, yeah. I mean, Shooter getting forced out, in my opinion, was one of them, because he was a great creative force behind the company. But I think some of the crossovers that, you know, I think giant line-wide crossovers rarely work out well for new superhero universes. And, you know, diverging a little, I mean, we had the Unity crossover, which, I mean, they were still riding high at that point. It wasn't kind of a death knell, but, you know, then they tried that Deathmate crossover with Image a little bit later, and that one really tanked.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we saw the same thing with various other publishers. I don't know why they keep on thinking it's a good idea to do these giant crossovers on a very young line of books.
The interesting thing is that it was Valiant's first crossover, Unity, which I think really propelled them into the spotlight. Because for about the first year and a half, they weren't publishing in high numbers, at least for the time in the 90s. A lot of their books had pretty low print runs, which, you know, 40, 50, 60,000 for the time was pretty low. You know, today
would make
be
it the number one selling book. Yeah.
Yeah. And in that time, I think people were slowly starting to notice that they were putting out a high quality product, but it hadn't quite caught on in the mainstream yet. And then they did their big Unity crossover, which it started about a year and a half after they started publishing. And it was a crossover with all eight of their books for 2 months. And in my mind, it's one of the best crossovers in comics that I've ever read. Just, I think it's very, very well constructed and well put together. And that kind of burst them into the spotlight, you know, along with hype from Wizard magazine and whatnot. It all of a sudden people started to notice that, like, oh wow, these Valiant comics are really good. And print runs increased up into the hundreds of thousands, if not millions. They just had a ton of success. But the interesting thing is, at that time is also when Jim Shooter, like you said, he was the creative force. He was pushed out of the company, and he was, I think, a lot of the drive and direction, and responsible for a lot of what made those early Valiant books what they were, and what made them such high quality. And then you get into more crossovers. You know, Deathmate being the most infamous example of these, where they printed a million copies. Everything was foil and shiny, and it was more about maybe going the Image route of producing spectacle, or at least Image at the time.
90s Image, right?
Yeah,
which we have to differentiate Image from Image today, because, you know, 90s Image, we had, you know, Wildcats and who are some of the other ones?
Youngblood. Spawn.
You know, it was all these characters that are now tanking in the new 52 of the DC universe. They just don't... I guess they just will not let these concepts die. I know some people like them, but, I mean, they don't sell well.
No.
They were a huge splash when the Image guys started up, right?
Yeah.
But I think for a variety of reasons, in my opinion, one of those being just a really sporadic publishing schedule, you know, a lot of them, you know, tailed off, and by, you know, what could have been like a very strong universe, it just, you know, they lost a lot. But a lot of those books had really strong runs too. I mean, Gen 13 ran a really long time, you know, Wildcats, and, you know, had a really strong run. But the Deathmate crossover, wasn't it, there were no numbers on the books, right? They were all just colors.
Yeah. And each was... There was a prologue and there was an epilogue, and then there were four issues in the middle, which were, instead of numbered, they were colored. So the issues produced by Valiant were yellow and blue, and the issues produced by Image were black and red. And it was, you know, at the time, Valiant and Image were kind of the up-and-comers and darlings of the industry, because they both launched at around a similar time, and both really quickly rose up in to achieve a lot of success. And so they were kind of, in some ways, they were the opposite of each other, because the way I always looked at it is Valiant was the company with great writing, but not very good art. and Image was the company with really great art, but not that great of writing. And I think both of those companies kind of started with those two stigmas. But then they became wildly popular. So of course, why not have a crossover? And, you know, that was, you know, both wildly popular and disastrous. I think, it sold tons of copies, but I think it kind of, poked a lot of holes in the, or exposed a lot of holes in the success of these companies.
So let's go back to the beginnings now. Let's talk about the launch of Valiant. And they really started out with a couple of licensed characters that they got from Gold Key. And that was Solar, Man of the Atom, and Magnus, Robot Fighter. Although kind of reimagined in... I kind of think of it as they were reimagined sort of like DC reimagined some of the Golden Age characters when they created the Silver Age.
Yeah, that's a really, really good analogy. That's almost exactly what they did. Jim Shooter was a fan of these characters, and he had this idea that he wanted to build a new superhero universe based off of these Gold Key characters. And so he managed to secure the rights, the license for these characters from whoever owned them at the time. I think it was like Golden Books or something. And the first title they launched with was Magnus Robot Fighter. And it was I kind of take that back. See, Magnus in some ways was a continuation. And I think at some points they did reference previous story arcs and the previous characters from the old Silver Age Gold Key came back, though it wasn't – it was meant to be, you know, a new incarnation.
Right. I mean, they started over from the beginning with him.
Yeah. And a few months after they launched Magnus, they launched Solar, Man of the Atom, which was a complete reimagining of the Dr. Solar 60 series from the 60s. And what I liked about that one, and Solar was my personal favorite. That was my absolute favorite Valiant title back when I was buying these as a teenager. This new incarnation of Solar, he was a scientist who actually read Dr. Solar comics when he was a kid. So they kind of paid homage to the original series, but in a way showing that, well, that original series was just comic books that this new character read when he was a kid. So when the accident occurred that turned him into Solar, he decided to take on the mantle of his old childhood hero. And I thought that was kind of a creative way to reboot the series and reimagine the series. And it turned out to be, I think, one of their better titles, at least in those early years. And I think people started to notice that they were putting out good, solid quality books. I didn't start reading them until the Unity crossover. So I missed a lot of that stuff when it first came out. Were you reading this stuff as it was launched?
Okay. I got all of this stuff off as it came out off the rack. And, you know, the thing I liked most about Solar was in each issue they had that couple pages of the origin story by Barry Windsor-Smith and Jim Shooter, which they would later collect. But, you know, a lot of the stuff pulled together and you made this giant comic book panel of the end of the story. And it was just like, you know, I remember like laying all these comic books together to make this giant final panel. You know, it was like, you know, they were kind of like building it up as they went along. It was very, very cool story. I really liked Solar. And Valiant themselves, I mean, they were hugely popular with fans and on the convention circuits. I remember at San Diego back, you know, in the day, when much, much smaller, you know, than it's become, you know, in nowadays terms. But I'm thinking Valiant might have started this trend, or else they were just kind of following on with it. But, you know, these platinum covers, platinum and gold logo covers, that was a thing that, you know, we were at the San Diego Con, and there was like a platinum version of Unity number 0 that they gave to everybody who came to the panel at San Diego.
Oh, nice.
And Jim Shooter and Barry Windsor Smith and all the guys had autographed it. And they gave out I don't know how many people were at the panel. There was a couple of hundred in any event. You know, so we all got this platinum copy of the comic all autographed and everything. And it was, you know, really cool. And it really built up the fan base, you know, that the Unity crossover was a great crossover though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The early Valiant, they did a lot of interesting promotional stuff. Starting with Magnus Robot Fighter, the first 8 issues included a coupon in the book that you could cut out, and if you had all 8 of the coupons, you could mail those to Valiant, and they would send you the 0 issue, which was like the prologue to the entire series.
Yeah, I think I bought like exactly what they wanted to happen. As I think I bought
two,
so I could cut the coupon out of one and send it in and get a copy of that Magnus number 0. And I think Malibu would do the same thing with, I'm thinking the series Rune or something, you know, where they had coupons that you had to send in to get something.
Yeah. And they did the same thing with Harbinger as well. The first 6 books included a coupon that you could cut out and send in to get the 0 issue of that. And then I think enough people started complaining that they hated cutting up their comic books. And so they stopped doing those types of promotions. But then they did, as you mentioned, the gold logo books. They started printing. It's essentially, it looks the same, except that the logo is in gold ink. And they would use these as promotional items. So they would give them away. And I got one when I was a kid by taking a picture of myself dressed up as Armstrong from Archer and Armstrong with my friend of mine, who he dressed up as Archer, and I created this giant display of all my Valiant comic books, and I took a picture of us dressed up, and I wrote a letter about how I was a huge fan of Valiant comics, and I told all my friends to buy Valiant comics because they were the best, and they sent me the gold logo edition of Archer and Armstrong number 0. So that was it. What was neat is at the time, that book was like a $100 book, because they were in such demand. So,
if only future Sean had the ability to go back in time, you would tell teenage Sean to sell that book for $100 so that, because you can buy it now for, I'm sure, considerably less.
Yeah, I've purchased quite a few copies since then for combined less than what that book was worth. But on the other hand, it's a great memento.
Yeah, sure.
And I still have the thank you letter that they sent with it. So, you know, I would never sell that book now just because of the sentimental value that it holds for me.
Yeah, I have lots of – I never would sell those things when I would get them. You know, I remember when I got that platinum autographed Unity number 0. I mean, they were going for tremendous, you know, coin if you would have wanted to sell it. But I didn't sell mine because I loved the comic and I wanted to keep it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they got a ton of success off of these titles because I think it was the kind of thing where just people were slowly starting to notice that they were just putting out pretty consistently good quality stuff and telling interesting stories. So they finally launched their first original character, which is Harbinger, which is, I think, one of the books that they're most well known for now and most remembered for.
Yeah. Harbinger was really my favorite of the Valiant books. I mean, I liked Magnus and Solar, but Harbinger, I really, really liked that series. It was a great series. Now, Magnus and Solar, you know, since those were licensed from Gold Key, a lot of people may have seen, if they didn't blink, you know, Dark Horse tried to bring those back.
Yeah.
Last year, the year before, and Jim Shooter writing them, but they didn't have the same magic that was there. You know, they tried to bring both those and Turok, which would come out later from Valiant, also, which was a Gold Key book. Just didn't capture that lightning in the bottle again with the Dark Horse relaunch. So the Valiant relaunch that we've got coming up in a few months' time, they're going to be concentrating on the original characters from Valiant and reimagining them, but keeping them sort of true to the originals in much the same way that the original Magnus and Solar were relatively true to the original incarnations, you know, even though they were reimagined, what Acclaim did to the characters.
Correct. Yeah, which was Valiant in name only, as I think of it. Yeah, and they've the new Valiant that will be coming out, they've said that they want to keep the core concepts that made these characters great from the original incarnation, but just tweak all the things that need to be updated and change the details to tell stories that make sense and are relevant for today. So I think we're going to see a lot of the influence of this original Valiant books in the new stuff that'll be coming out starting this summer.
So let's give kind of a rundown of Harbinger.
Okay. So Harbinger is about a group of teenagers, and the primary protagonist is Pete Stanchek, who, as a teenager, he realizes that he has incredibly powerful psionic powers. He's kind of a Jean Grey, if you will, that he's telekinetic, has psychic abilities. And he lines up with this group called the Harbinger Foundation, which is led by Toyo Harada, who, it turns out, also has these same powers as Pete Stanchek. And Harbingers is their name for people that have these natural talents. It's kind of Valiant's version of mutants.
Yeah.
And in some ways, it's kind of just a similar concept to the X-Men, except Professor Xavier turned out to be evil.
Yeah.
Which is what happened, because Harada turned out to be, kind of the main antagonist and evil. He was always kind of portrayed as, well, he was doing what he thought was right. He just happened to be kind of maybe a sociopath about it. But he created this foundation to find these people with these powers and help them learn how to use his powers. And, you know, he eventually kind of wanted to, you know, probably take over the world or make the world completely safe for these people or something. And so Pete Stanchek realizes that, well, Harada's an evil guy. So he goes on the run from Harada, and he meets up with other teenagers who have different abilities in different Harbinger abilities. And it's kind of a teenagers on the run kind of a book. The youthful rebellion versus the powers that be that are trying to rule the world or whatever. And that's the core of the book is Pete Stanchek versus Harada. What I really loved about it is that it was fundamentally about teenagers, but in a way where all these teenagers were forced to deal with these difficult, mature, grown-up situations. And they approached it in the storytelling in a way that I think was much more mature than was the kind of bar for the time, and with a lot more realism than you would usually see in comics at the time. And they told really great stories about the interactions between the characters and kind of how their relationships changed and developed and whatnot. And in my mind, the first seven issues of Harbinger is probably the best thing that Valiant ever produced. I think that it's just kind of the most top-notch storytelling. And I would kind of put it up there as one of the better comics produced from that era.
Yeah, we'll definitely need to do a back issue spotlight focusing on that particular story at some point prior to the relaunch happening.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. So what did you remember about Harbinger?
You hit a lot of the high points there. I mean, I really liked the struggle between Stanchek and Harada. And I also liked the fact that even though they were kids, they didn't act like teen sidekicks or teen characters that you'd see in Marvel and DC comics, who were sometimes a little dippy, you know?
Yeah, a little G-shucks.
Yeah, exactly. You know, by the 90s, not as much, but, you know, they weren't solo kind of standalone characters as much, because most of the teen characters in the Marvel and DC universe tended to be affiliated with some adult group. You know, you'd have the Teen Titans, and, you know, they all, you know, Kid Flash had Flash, and Robin had Batman, and even when they didn't directly, you know, they didn't have as much of a kind of a standalone kind of real feel. And also the fact that they didn't really have them running around in costumes and stuff. Mm-hmm. It just made it seem like it was a little more grounded in reality, you know, with all these fantastical things that were happening. I really liked the characters that they had, but, you know, Stanchek versus Harada was a great dynamic, and just the teens on the run aspect of that story, too.
Yeah. The grounded in reality was one of the trademarks, I think, of Valiant Comics, in that they really made an effort to create a world that was as close as possible to the world we live in. The only difference being that some people have these incredible powers, but then they bring up things of, well, if people actually had these powers, how would it realistically work out for, you know, the super strong character had to wear a lot of weights because they actually didn't have enough leverage to pick up a car or something. So they would have to increase their mass so that they could actually use their strength and, you know, ground themselves and not just, you know, push themselves away from the car, you know, for instance. And one example I always like is the characters that could fly, like Solar and Exo, they wouldn't fly like how Superman flies, you know, like looking straight forward with his arms out in the air. They flew kind of just like they were standing up, which is, yeah. You know, if you and me could fly, that's how we'd fly. We wouldn't fly around like Superman because our arms would get tired and our necks would cramp up. So they made a lot of points to really kind of think through realistically how all that would play out. And that was one of the things that I really enjoyed about the books. Another thing that they were really known for, especially earlier on, was the really tight continuity between the different books. So all of the characters would show up in the other books. You'd have times where you would see something from one character's point of view happen in one book, and then you'd see the same thing happen from a different character's point of view in the other book. And you could read each just alone, but if you're reading both, you got, like, both sides of the story.
But they didn't beat you over the head with that, which was the good part.
Yeah. And, like, there was an early crossover between Exo Manowar and Harbinger, where they were both in New Orleans, and they have an encounter, and you see Exo Manowar's trip to New Orleans from his perspective, and then in the Exo Manowar book, and then you see the Harbinger's trip to New Orleans from their perspective in their book, and they interact with each other, but in a way where if you only read one of them, you still got the full story for those characters.
Right.
Yeah. And they did a really good job of creating those types of books where you don't need to read them all, but when you do read them all, you just get an extra layer of enjoyment out of them. And that kind of brings up Exo Manowar, which is the next original character that Valiant launched.
I really liked Arik and his good skin.
Yes. Uh-huh. And Exo Manowar, you know, the simple way to describe him is he's Conan in Iron Man armor. And that was what was just a lot of fun, is like he basically had a barbarian attitude in modern day. And due to fate, he becomes the CEO of a gigantic corporation, which he, you know, runs as if it's his barbarian tribe. And it's really entertaining and really fun stuff.
So he's a Visigoth warrior who gets kidnapped or taken by these spider aliens.
Yeah.
And through one of these, kind of Einstein's theory of relativity of, like, traveling near the speed of light, you know, time dilation and all this kind of stuff, you know, he's taken away and comes back, and it's like what wasn't much time at all for him is, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years by the time he's back, you know, to Earth. And
yeah.
He gets a hold of this suit of sentient armor that these spider aliens had, and he bonds with it. And, you know, that's, he calls it his
good skin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because in his mind, you know, he, as a barbarian, he wears skins of animals. So armors are just another skin to wear. And then, you know, this skin was the best one of all.
Right.
Yeah.
You have one of those exo rings, right? The brass
rings. Yes, I do.
Rings that I have one of those too.
Yeah, if you see me at a convention, chances are I'll be wearing my Exo Manowar ring. Yeah. Exo Manowar is another one of those titles that I think is what Valiant is most remembered for. And I think it was one of the more popular titles when Valiant started to hit their peak in a few years after the original launch of Valiant Comics. And I think that's largely why Exo Manowar is going to be the first title launched this summer, just because it's one of the most widely remembered. So they're kind of, I guess, you know, launching with their big guns. So they had a couple other really early characters that they launched, which was Rai and Shadow Man. And Rai was set in the year 4000 AD, in the same time frame as Magnus, Robot Fighter. And he was Japan's protector. And Shadow Man was set in New Orleans, and he was kind of a voodoo-powered demon hunter fighter kind of guy.
With jazz music thrown in.
Yeah, yeah. He was a jazz musician.
Yeah.
Until he got infected and became this kind of voodoo-powered warrior. Yeah. So it was a cool mix of, you know, New Orleans jazz with. You know, this guy who is essentially, when he's in the shadows, when it's nighttime, he gets stronger, more sure of himself, more aggressive, and he just kind of hunts people that he sees being like the demons of the world. And you know, one of the, I think, the big characteristics of Valiant Comics is that they didn't have any traditional superheroes in the sense of like the Marvel or DC had superheroes. All their characters were super powered or extraordinary in some way, but you know, they weren't like Spider-Man or Daredevil or Superman or Batman who got their abilities and then decide to patrol the city at night and, you know, stop crooks and, you know, bad dudes and stuff. The conflict kind of arose naturally out of what would happen if people had these extraordinary abilities. And,
right. And an important part that is that I think Shooter really wanted to make sure that, you know, to the best of his ability, you know, not being like a scientist, but I mean, being looking things up in books back then, because I still think it was pre-internet.
Yeah.
You know, he tried to make sure that everybody, like you were talking about with the counterweights and stuff, that, you know, everyone was affected by, you know, like the laws of the universe, you know, like Newton's laws of motion, and, you know, someone flew really fast, you know, friction would, you know, heat them up, and, you know, you couldn't just do crazy stuff that wasn't, that just kind of flew in the face of the natural laws of the universe as we understand them.
Yeah. And I know that they did quite a bit of research, and I, Jim Shooter, I think he's a bit of an amateur scientist, and always really is kind of loved science. So he wanted to make sure that this universe he was creating that it made sense, and that it was realistic in that way, like you said. So by this time, Valiant had launched six titles. Magnus and Solar, and then Harbinger and Exo Manowar, and then Rai and Shadow Man before they did their first big crossover, which was Unity. And one of the really interesting things about Unity is that the first chapter was a free book. It was Unity Zero, and it was given out for free, or, you know, in theory, it was given out for free by comic shops to people who were buying the entire story. And then chapters two and three were the first issues of new series, Eternal Warrior and Archer and Armstrong. So it was kind of an interesting thing they did, which was launch two of their new titles right in the middle of a big crossover. And, you know, they essentially expanded their line of comics by 33%, while at the same time telling this really ambitious crossover, which was, you know, probably kind of risky. But
well, they did a good job of it, though. You know, yeah. It's like today publishers try to do the same thing, and it doesn't come across as well because I just don't think the craft is there in telling the story and weaving it in. I mean, this, it's just, plus I guess getting there first is has a lot to do with, you know, not feeling like, you know, it was the whole idea of a crossover like that back then was mm-hmm. still kind of new. And now we've been just beat to death with the things. That it's just, oh no, not another crossover. It was still like a really cool new thing back then. So it's just like, wow, I'm eating this up. This is the coolest thing ever, you know.
Yeah.
Like with anything, the first time you discover something, it's much better than this, you know, maybe the 100th time.
The other thing that was really, really exciting about the Unity crossover is that all of the books leading up to it tied into it in some way, in that every title had, every character had something important happen to them in Unity, in a real way, not in the sense of, you know, everything's going to change kind of way, but in some pretty serious ways. Almost all of the characters, something changed for them. I forgot to ask this. Is this a full spoiler?
We may as well, because I mean they're not gonna come back to these concepts, I don't think, in the new stuff.
I don't think so. But it's, you know, they killed off one of the main characters of one of the books in the Unity crossover, and
we don't have to say who it was. We can just say that they killed off one of the main characters. That way, if somebody wants to go back and pick that up and read it, you know, they won't know exactly who.
Sure, but you know, in the sense of, well, there's a character that this book was only about them. And that character died during this crossover. And the next issue that was published didn't have that character in it at all. And he was never brought back to life. The book continued in a different sort of a way, but with major changes to the characters that the book was about. So the entire story, essentially the story of Unity began with that Solar Man of the Atom, the story that was included with the first 10 issues. The roots of the core conflict of that series are told in that story. So I think that Jim Shooter had this idea the entire time, from the time he started this universe, that everything was going to lead up to this crossover. And it shows in the books that he did, because everything does lead up to it. And then what happens in Unity happens as a result of things that have come before in just really a masterfully constructed way. And it's rare that I see that kind of crafted group of stories that all work together to tell one single story. It's very infrequent, and I can't really think of any other examples of stories that do that to the extent that it was done with Unity.
Right. And, you know, I think that just, I don't know how long Shooter had been planning it. You know, had he been planning this kind of a thing from the beginning? Because it tied in so many things from, you know, the earlier, what, about a year or so of, how long had Valiant been going on before this, about a year?
They had been 1 year and 4 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it just, you know, from bringing in Erica Pierce and how she was, you know, tied in, and just expanding the kind of family and all the ties between the different characters and how it all just meshed together. It was a very well-planned story. Mm-hmm. You know, that it just really flowed nicely and everything seemed to make sense. It really seemed like they had stepped back and done their work on making this a really seamless attempt at telling a story.
Yeah, and that's what I noticed. And this was the first stuff that I read when I was a kid. And Unity is what made me a Valiant fan, because I think I read that it was upcoming in a Comic Shop News or something. Is that the little publication that they give out at comic shops?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So I knew that this Unity thing was coming up, and all I knew about it was what I read in there, and I thought, wow, that sounds really, really cool. So I started mowing lawns and doing chores to get as much money as I could to buy all of the Unity crossover. And I think it took me about halfway through the first issue for me to just become a huge fan of Valiant Comics. I loved it instantly from the get-go. So I think that speaks to the strength. And I can still go back and read that Unity crossover and enjoy it just as much as I did when I first read it. I think it still really holds up really well.
Yeah, and on the plus side, I mean, they publish so darn many of these Valiant comics. I mean, they were selling really well. I mean, back in the day, I mean, you know, you look at how much comics sell now. I mean, these things were selling like, you know, close to a million.
Yeah.
You know, at least, you know, 700,000-800,000 copies. You know, some of them might have been down around 500,000 or something. But back in this era of Valiant, I think that even the low-selling titles were selling 500,000 copies, or at least they were making 500,000 copies. So it's not terribly expensive to collect most of these comics. There's a couple of exceptions, and, you know, of course, some of these, you know, like gold logo covers and some of the special things might be expensive. But you can pick up, you know, the trade paperbacks that Valiant did, as well as the comics themselves, were relatively cheap. And, you know, these stories, they stand today and are really entertaining. If you haven't read this stuff, going on to some place like mycomicshop.com or Comic Collector Live or, you know, different online places and just browsing around and seeing about buying, you know, the different Unity books or the first, you know, 10 issues of Exo Manowar or something like that, probably cost you a lot less than buying 10 comics off the rack.
Yeah. I just bought a copy of Exo Manowar number 5 at WonderCon for $1. So they're still out there for really decent prices. Some of the books from that pre-Unity era, that first year and a half, are pretty scarce, because when they were first getting going, they weren't printing in quite the high numbers quite yet. So some of the Harbinger books can be pretty scarce to find. Those Zero books that were the sendaways, those are lower in numbers, so those are fairly scarce to find. And Solar number 10, which...
The black cover, yeah.
Yeah, it's an all-black cover. It has the logo...
embossed on it.
Embossed. And it has Barry Windsor-Smith's signature on
it's
it.
Almost... It's almost not even embossed, though, right? It's just like almost like a shiny part. It doesn't really stick up that much.
It sticks up a little bit.
But not like a heavy embossing.
It's not like some of the embossing that we would see several years later in the height of the...
Yeah, embossing craze from like Marvel Comics and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, so Unity, I think it really put Valiant in the spotlight, and they started printing tons and tons of books. And... It in the books that came out from between Unity for the next several years are, you know, those are the books where, you know, if they cost more than 5 cents each, I won't buy them. And even then, I probably wouldn't buy them because I have so many copies, because they're just, you know, a dime a dozen, you know, sometimes literally. There were just so many copies were put out. And this is where you get the, you know, like the Rye and the Future Force number 9. The Turok number 1s, you know.
Exo Zero, which came out like not before the issue 1. Like, you know, now they do issue 0s and they come out before issue 1. Exo Zero came out. What issue did it come out around?
It came out around the late teens, when Exo Manowar was in the late teens, I think.
Yeah, and that's a chromium cover.
Yeah.
I've seen that for 50 cents and less.
You know, yeah.
It's like, I have people give me that, you know, it's like, here, you know, you bought some back issues. Let me throw in a copy of the chrome cover of Exo-Manor.
Yeah.
I think I brought that to the comic swap at San Diego last year. You took it just because you'll take anything that's got a Valiant logo on it, I think.
Yeah, I think
But nobody wanted it. You know, yeah. Those ingrates.
I think I have about a dozen copies of that book. And a lot of it's just on accident, you know? Just because I'll buy a box of Valiant Comics for $5 or something, and there'll be three copies of that in there. Yeah, I know there's people that use Turok number one as packing material, you know, because it's cheaper than getting anything else. And what happened right after Unity is we mentioned this briefly earlier, but Jim Shooter was forced out of Valiant due to creative differences, business differences. It sounds a lot like it was the kind of classic conflict of creative prerogative versus business prerogative, where I think a lot of the people that had invested in the company said, you know, we've got a really good thing here. Let's print a million books. And, you know, double the amount of titles we're selling because, hey, we're going to make bundles of money now. And I think Jim Shooter didn't like that approach. And I don't know all the details. And I think a lot of those details are still kind of not all publicly known. And there's a whole lot of he said, she said about that. But the books did decline in quality a little bit after Jim Shooter left. So like just when Valiant was really getting into gear and starting to publish a ton of books, they didn't have the same creative guidance that they did. And that kind of next couple years were really under the guidance of Bob Layton and Kevin Van Hook, who were the kind of editor-in-chief, and I don't know exactly what Kevin Van Hook was, but he was kind of second in command creatively, from what I remember. But there's still a lot of really great stories, and you know, one of the standouts was Archer and Armstrong, which was done by Barry Windsor Smith, and it was essentially just given to Barry Windsor Smith to write and draw, and is one of the standouts from that time. And you know, the concept of Archer and Armstrong is that Archer is a kid who his parents try to kill him. So he runs away from home, and he becomes a monk where he learns hand-to-hand combat and marksmanship and stuff. So he comes back to get revenge on his parents, but his parents are in jail, so he's kind of aimless. And he runs into Armstrong, who's a 5,000-year-old immortal who just decides that, well, best thing to do with my life is to just kind of, like, drink a lot of booze and maybe get in an occasional fight. And essentially, he's a bum, but he's a... Yeah. You know, secretly, you know, knows all the stuff through history, and you know, secretly has a giant mansion on an island in the Mediterranean, you know, stuff like that. But just chooses to kind of loaf around anyway, just because that's what he prefers. Were you a Archer and Armstrong fan?
I read it. I thought it was okay. I was not a huge Archer and Armstrong fan. I didn't like dress up like him or anything.
I just did that once. Just once.
From that era, what my favorite book was from that era was The Second Life of Dr. Mirage.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I really liked that book. And I really liked Bernard Chang's art on that book.
Yeah.
He left comics for a long time, and he's back now at DC. His style is different now, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same as it was back then.
Yeah, a few people got their start at Valiant who are still names today. Bernard Chang, like you mentioned, got a start there. Sean Chen, who's done a lot of stuff for DC recently, he got a start at Valiant. David Laffam, who's doing a lot of stuff for Marvel right now, I think.
Oh, well, he's done his own stuff. I mean, he did Stray Bullets and... Young Liars. He does a lot of Avatar books. You know, he's done a lot of stuff. You know, he was the penciler on Harbinger.
Yeah.
You know, he was right there at the beginning.
Yeah.
Of Valiant.
Yeah, and he was
he, He followed Shooter over, didn't he? Do Plasm, Warriors of Plasm, with him over at the Defiant.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, because when Jim Shooter was pushed out of Valiant, he went to go to start another comic company called Defiant. And David Laffam followed him over to Defiant, and I think Plasm is the book that is they're most known for from that.
Yeah,
I was never as much a fan of the Defiant stuff. It just didn't hit for me in the same way that Valiant.
I liked Plasm okay. I really enjoyed a lot of the Broadway comics, which was the company that came after.
Even
after Defiant. There was some really good books at Broadway Comics. I don't know if you've ever checked those out.
I haven't. That's one thing I've never really gotten into is Broadway.
There's some really good books there.
Okay.
We can talk about them some other day.
I'll have to read them first.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in this era, the Valiant doubled their line in size, and they had a whole bunch of new characters like Hardcores, Bloodshot, the Turok book finally launched, Second Life of Dr. Mirage, as you mentioned, Ninjak, Armorines, and Psylords, and then Geomancer and Time Walker all were the kind of next batch of Valiant books. They came out in about the 2 years following the Unity crossover. And, you know, the quality started to kind of vary on the books. You know, some of them were really great. Yeah, I think some of the standouts were Shadow Man. I still really like the Solar stuff. And Bloodshot is a character that I really, really like a lot. And he's another one that they're going to be launching this summer again. And he's kind of their Punisher or Wolverine or you know, Deathstroke kind of character, the kind of one man killing machine type of character.
Yeah, I liked Hardcore. That was a cool book.
Yeah, you know, that was one. I thought it was a really interesting idea because the premise was it was this group of commandos that were kind of secretly resisting the Harbinger Foundation from, you know, the Harbinger book. And they weren't Harbingers themselves, but they had an ability to get loaded up with the powers of different Harbingers. And they could switch from one power to another. You know, so like, for instance, good examples is, you know, one of the guys will be flying and then he switches to like the super mass. So that, you know, he'll plummet down like a bomb down on top of somebody, you know, stuff like that. And it was a great idea, but it wasn't my cup of tea, and it wasn't one of my favorite Valiant books. But it was another one of those. The first issue of Hardcores is one you'll find in dollar bins pretty often. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it features a cover by Jim Lee, strangely, you know, of all people. Which was kind of an interesting change because I was so used to, you know, Image being the books with the awesome art and Valiant being the books with, you know, decent art but not as great. And all of a sudden, you know, Jim Lee was drawing the cover and, you know, that really blew me away when I was a kid. Yeah, so they had a pretty good output, I think, in those several years following. And there's really a lot of great stuff. And as you said, the best thing is you can get all this stuff from this era for, you know, a quarter each, you know, 50 cents each. It's so much was printed. There's just so much of it out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So finally, all the people that were in it for the business, they got their big payout, and Acclaim Comics bought Acclaim, the video game company, bought Valiant Comics because they were trying to kind of cash in on this comic book craze and try to leverage that into video game sales. And they tried to buy Image Comics, but all the Image guys kind of, I think, laughed them out of the office and said, yeah, right, no way. But so they went and bought Valiant because it seemed like, oh, well, they're the other exciting, you know, guys on the block. And they paid $65 million for Valiant in 1994, which, you know, considering it was built off of a $2 million initial investment, was just a huge, huge return on investment for everybody involved.
Which, you can't blame the guys for selling it. Like, you get to see the dollar signs, like cash register sounds in their brains, cha-ching, you know. It's like, here, have it.
Yeah. You know, they built a company to make money, and this was their chance to, you know, reap the rewards for all of that. So I don't blame them at all for selling to Acclaim.
Then Acclaim, like, proceeded to ride the company straight into the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like, it's like a crashing plane. It was hilarious.
See, Acclaim thought that it would be a really good idea if all of the Valiant books started to basically look like they were just video games. And what's interesting is I think it's most apparent in Exo Manowar. And that Exo Manowar continued on pretty steadily and pretty high quality until about issue 40, which was right about when Acclaim took over and bought them. And then with one issue, it just completely changed. And you get books where, you know, it's basically Exo Manowar flying around saying, "I am mighty and I will crush my enemies," and, you know, big explosions. And, you know, it's kind of a Michael Bay movie in a way, but just all of the storytelling was just gone. And it was just kind of instantly just went downhill. Their idea, of course, being that, well, people that read these comics are going to want to buy our video games. And they did have some success from what I remember. I think they put out some Shadow Man games that were pretty successful, if I recall. And I think they had an Iron Man and Exo Manowar game that they put out that did well. So I think it kind of paid off, but it did just destroy the comics. And in 1996, they basically just canceled the entire Valiant Comics line and relaunched it as Acclaim Comics. And nothing was the same. You know, they kept the same titles of the books, but all of the characters were completely different. And I don't really like any of those books from that time. There's some people that enjoy some of them, and I've heard some titles are better than others, but
I hear really good things about, like, Quantum and Woody, for instance.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's one of the...
You know, there's... I mean, they pulled in some pretty decent name creators, I mean, you know, to do books during that era.
Yeah,
you know?
and that was what was surprising. Like, I think Mark Waid wrote the relaunched Exo Manowar. I don't remember offhand some of the other people, but Shadow Man was written by Warren Ellis and I think Jamie Delano. They had some good creators, and yeah, Quantum and Woody is the big standout that a lot of people remember, and was probably one of the best books that Acclaim put out. Shadow Man is remembered pretty well, also, from what I recall. I've heard that's pretty good. But I'm not as big a fan of the Acclaim stuff. Well, I'm not really a fan of the Acclaim stuff.
Yeah, it was kind of hard to find some of those because I don't think they published quite as many of them. They were not making hundreds of thousands of these things.
Yeah, and towards the end, like the numbers being published were in the thousands, because sales just kind of steadily declined until, you know, they had to pull the plug.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's kind of the history of Valiant, and then Acclaim stopped publishing anything, and then finally when Acclaim went bankrupt, they sold all the properties, and the group of folks that is now the new Valiant Comics bought them all, and they've been kind of slowly working up to publishing them again. And I think, you know, there's a lot of weird history and lawsuits involved in the last 8 or 9 years of that history as well, but I don't think we need to get into that.
No, I mean, there was some interesting stuff from the Acclaim era. I mean, it's like you had Warren Ellis doing, you know, with Derek Robertson, I think, did the Solar relaunch, you know, Man of the Atom. You know, they actually brought in some pretty high-powered creative people, but it, you know, much like the Dark Horse relaunch of the Gold Key characters, there was just something that wasn't there, you know? It was missing something.
It seemed
some undefinable quality that just
what it felt to me is that the storytelling became more just about the comic book storytelling equivalent of just like junk food. Yeah, empty calories, where it's, you know, exciting action-packed stuff that is fun to read, but there's not a lot of like maybe emotional depth or depth of character to the storytelling that was going on at the times.
Right.
And I think, a lot of the books kind of suffered from that. And, you know, I don't think it's necessarily a mark on these creative teams, because I think that they were probably putting out the kinds of books that they were asked to be put out. Because I imagine that, you know, in this time is in a sense, you know, Image won. Image won the battle in some ways. And I think around that mid-90s time, the idea was, well, we should just tell, you know, action-packed stories that are fun to read but don't necessarily have a lot of storytelling depth to them.
Right.
And, you know, I think that was kind of all across the board in the 90s. You know, it wasn't just Valiant. It was Image. It was Marvel. It was DC. So it was just kind of, you know, the era.
Yeah, you will hear as time goes on, I mean, aside from us, I mean, lots of people fondly remember Valiant Comics.
Yeah.
Lots of people fondly remember the original cross-gen comics. A lot of people, probably fewer than those two, but there are people who fondly remember Malibu's Ultraverse before Marvel got their hands on it and destroyed it. There are not, I've not heard a lot of people speak highly of Acclaim comics, with the exception, again, of, you know, like a couple of things, you know, like Chris Priest did Quantum and Woody. I looked that up.
Yeah, it's
just, you know, I've heard very good things about Chris Priest's Quantum and Woody, and, you know, there's just a couple of books here and there, but in general, it was just, like you said, it was kind of the comic book equivalent of a summer popcorn movie or junk food or something. It was like fun and bombastic, but it's not something people are talking about 20 years later.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
They just don't stand that test of time. And it really is the case that the original Valiant stuff, I mean, I've reread those. I don't reread that many series from 20 years ago. I mean, you'll go back to certain things, like you'll reread, you know, like the early Teen Titans stuff or Crisis on Infinite Earths, or, you know, there's just various things that are considered, you know, Watchmen, you know, things that are classics of comics. And I've reread a lot of the Valiant stuff, and the Valiant stuff stands the test of time.
Yeah, I think it really does. I got most of this stuff in the early 2000s because when it was coming out, I couldn't afford most of the back issues because of the ridiculously high prices. But then when I got back into comics when I was in college and started buying comics again, one of the first things I did was go buy a bunch of the old Valiant comics that I couldn't afford at the time. And the books that were $100 when I was a kid were now $3, $4, $5. So I was able to put together my collection. And that's, I think, one thing that's really great is that all this stuff is just, it's easily available if you want to buy back issues, and it's not going to cost you an arm and a leg if people do want to get it. So I guess the question that I would have is, if somebody who hasn't read Valiant at all, where do you think they should start if they were interested in kind of finding out what Valiant was like in the 90s?
Personally, I would point them at, if they could find the issues or trade paperbacks of Harbinger, Exo, to start out. And, you know, to a lesser extent, Solar and Magnus, any of those early things, because Valiant did start, they're probably one of the earlier companies that put out trade paperbacks too, of collections of a lot of those stories. So I remember having soft covers. These are things that I double dipped on at the time, and I have trade paperbacks of some of those books.
Yeah, me too. The one kind of a red flag I would raise, if people get the Harbinger trade paperback, it only includes issues 1 through 4, and we're talking about the trade paperback that Valiant published back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And I think that the power of those early issues doesn't quite sink in until you read 5, 6, and 7 also.
Well, they did a hardcover recently-ish.
Yeah.
That actually included a previously unpublished storyline or story or something, right?
Yeah.
I remember.
One of the first things that the current Valiant did, and this was about 3 or 4 years ago now, is they republished some of those early stories in hardcover form. So there's a hardcover collection of Harbinger 0 through 7 and a hardcover collection of Exo Manowar 0 through 6, which are all the issues before the Unity crossover. And they got Jim Shooter to write a new story for the Harbinger hardcover. And they got, I think, Bob Layton to write a new story for the Exo Manowar hardcover. And they're just short, like, 8-page stories. But they're fun little additions to that.
Okay, I'm finding it. It's on the Harbinger one. I'll put it in the show notes. It's on Amazon. It's called Harbinger the Beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's $25. You know, you can buy it, it looks like, on Amazon Marketplace from some people, save a couple of bucks off of that. But you can definitely get it on Amazon. It's in stock.
Yeah.
That would be the place I would point people to. It's probably the easiest way to get your hands on what's a really great story.
I would agree. And yeah, I think most people would agree as well. But if you can find that, the Harbinger, the Beginning hardcover collection, and the, I think the Exo Manowar hardcover
collection.
Yeah, we've
got that one. It's there too.
I believe it's called Birth.
Yeah, the problem with the Exo one is that one doesn't appear to be available in stock. It's like available from these sellers at like greatly increased prices.
Oh.
It's like $60.
Wow. Okay. Hopefully,
the Harbinger one is still available, though. So, you know, that would be something.
Yeah. You can also find a lot of times the old Exo Manowar hardcover or trade paperback printed by back in the 90s for, you know, I routinely pass them up for $5 each. And it includes issues 1 through 4, which is 2/3 of what's included in that hardcover collection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That Harbinger one's probably the easiest one to get your hands on.
I think so. Yeah, I would definitely agree with you there. That's, I think, the perfect recommendation of where to start with this stuff.
And, you know, it's actually, you know, before that one ends up doing a price increase like the Exo book, if you didn't get it.
Well, my hope is that this stuff may come back in print.
It would be nice if they reprinted some of this stuff again.
Yeah, because I imagine there will be some interest if this new Valiant is successful. You know, I'm sure that a lot of people would be interested in that hardcover. So, you know, I would think that they would reprint it if there's enough demand. If it makes sense to reprint it, they would do it. You know, I don't think they're interested in those books being collector's items. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Great. I think that kind of, you know, I could talk for hours and hours and hours, but from the kind of brief overview of what Valiant was, I think that is kind of what I've got to say about it.
Yep. Next up for us is, you know, we're going to be looking at getting our hands on the new Exo book, and then the next month, the new Harbinger book.
Those will both be really exciting.
I am very excited to have my hands on those. So
yeah, I'm glad to hear you're such a fan of Valiant. I mean, I knew that you had read the stuff, but I didn't know just how much you had enjoyed it.
No, I loved Valiant. You know, back in the 90s, I loved Valiant. You know, I was going through some of the similar Marvel and DC angst that I'm going through right now, because, you know, Marvel, everyone was starting to wear leather jackets with lots of pouches all over them and stuff.
Yeah,
and, you know, it'd be like, you know, the whole team of the Avengers were wearing a jacket, and it's like, that wasn't my Avengers. I people who started reading comics in the 90s, they love that stuff because it's what they grew up on. It's what turned them on to comics, and that's great. but I was kind of turning and looking for something different.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, and what I found was, you know, I found Valiant, you know,
yeah.
And I found the Malibu Ultraverse, and I found lots of other things that were exciting in that day.
Yeah.
And they were all relatively short-lived as those things went.
Yeah, there was a lot of those. The 90s, you know, there are a lot of flames that burnt hot and fast and then burnt out. I think, you know, Image is really the only one that really survived.
Yeah.
But they really just did it by completely changing their tune and reinventing the type of company that they are.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if they had stayed being, you know, the
all teeth and pouches, you know, all the time.
Well, yeah, you know, like grimacing people with lots of little lines all over them.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like having the, well, they're doing a lot of great stuff nowadays, but it's, you know, not that many people are taking notice of some of the truly great stuff that they're putting out.
Yeah.
You know, but that's time for that'd be time for doing an image show.
Oh yeah.
But you know, as far as Valiant went, it's definitely worth checking out some of this old stuff from Valiant, and it's definitely worth, if you have not done so yet, going out and asking your comic shop to pull a copy of EXO and a copy of Harbinger for you, because I think those have a potential to fly off the shelves. I'm hoping not, but you know, it might be the case that stores are not ordering enough of them.
Yeah, it could be. You know, if the stories are there, like they have the potential to be, and the quality is there, like the potential, there is the potential to be. It could really take a lot of people by surprise, just like it did back in 1991.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'll be there. I've already got multiple copies ordered, so
yeah.
I'm set.
Yeah, no kidding. We're both going to be there, you and I.
Yeah.
Getting the talking cover of EXO number one.
Yep, I've got mine on order.
So do I.
Yep, awesome. That's great. Yeah, well, I hope people enjoyed this kind of recap of what Valiant was, and I hope they'll check out what Valiant will be this summer. I think that there'll be some pretty fun, interesting, and exciting comics, so I just hope they live up to that expectation.
Yeah, and, you know, one other kind of a final nod of the hat here I'll make to forum member, the one captain, Brad, who is the guy who sent me an email a few weeks ago, kind of getting me up off my butt and saying, hey, with the upcoming relaunch of Valiant, you should do a publisher spotlight. And I said, you know, I should.
All right. Way to go, one captain there.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And check out the show notes if you enjoyed this episode. And check out Sean's podcast, Only the Valiant.
Yeah, we're at onlythevaliant.com. And, you know, we don't always only talk about Valiant, but it's mostly
lies. It's all lies.
All lies. Yes. If you like lies, listen to our show.
It's mostly the Valiant.
Mostly the Valiant. Yeah. There we go. That didn't have the same ring to it.
Very good.
Great.
Thanks for joining me, Sean.
My pleasure. Thank you.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.